The inventories before me were more extensive than I could possibly have hoped for. Amid the substantial gunship wings and air assault vehicles, all of which fell under the purview of the Navy, there were also armoured divisions listed, as well as engineering and infantry corps. In addition to that, the fleet's composition was not just carriers. There were ships of the line there, too, armed with void-level weaponry. "How did you possibly obtain all this?" I asked, looking up at her as she carried on walking over to another pair of doors at the far end of the chamber. "These detachments are in Ashariel's province." Perith nodded. "They are. And the answer is very simple. I asked him for them." She opened the doors. On the far side stood the Lord Commander Militant, flanked by armed guards of the Cathartia Arenas. Beyond them were officers in naval uniforms, also heavily armed. Ashariel. I was lost for words. I remembered how dismissive he had been with me at our first meeting, and for a wild moment considered that perhaps my arguments had actually been taken on board, and that he had come round in time to my position. The way they both looked at me put that notion swiftly out of contention.
"Yes, there has been treachery, Anna Mercer, just as you suspected," Perith said. "Only not from the source you imagine. The divine order of the Imperium, given to us in perpetuity by he who sits on the throne, has served for 10,000 years. Did you really imagine that a man, a single man, could so easily sweep it all away?"
I felt light-headed. I had trusted her completely. Roscavla had been right, and I had failed to see it.
"He is no man,"
I said weakly.
"True,"
said Ashariel, just as gruffly as before, and with that old bullying light in his eyes.
"He's a damned Primarch. He belongs to another age. What can he understand of this one?"
"He appointed you,"
I blurted, stunned at the casual disloyalty.
"Yes, so he did,"
Ashariel said.
"Which tells you all you need to know about his vaunted judgment."
He took out that damned coin again and started to turn it between his fingers.
"The 12 have governed for generations uncounted. They have weathered every storm that fate threw at them. They will not be neutered now by some gene relic from a failed past."
"The Regent can wage all the wars he likes,"
Perith added.
"Only it will be at our command. You know your history. You know what happens when the Adeptus Astartes cease to become our servants and become our masters."
"You are deluded,"
I countered, feeling desperate now. "I should never have come alone."
"He will come back for you. You cannot hope to stand against him."
"Gilliman is far away, Chancellor, and fully occupied,"
said Perith, sounding supremely unconcerned.
"And this is terror, a world that has consumed its generals and spat them out over millennia. He will see the sense of it in time. After all, he's always been a stickler for the Lex."
It was madness. It was the course of destruction. Only then did I recall what Perith had told me the very first time we had met. "I have served with Mar-Av over many decades. I know him well." "Your peers will never stand for it," I said, though I knew I was casting around for scraps.
"They already have,"
said Perith.
"Now, time runs short. I am needed on the flagship, as is the Lord Commander Militant, for we have a campaign to oversee."
I stood as tall as I could and clenched my fists.
"And what of me, then?"
I asked, determined that if they should kill me here, I would meet my death with both eyes open. Ashariel laughed, flicking the coin and catching it in the same hand.
Worry not, Chancellor. We're not savages.
Then he smiled, a lizard-like gesture that made my spine twitch.
You wanted this army, remember? You asked for it. So, you're coming with us. Pay close attention, and we'll show you just what can be done with it.
Chapter 20. Valerian. Aleia's tidings weighed heavily on my mind. After meeting her and hearing news of the attack on the Citadel, I ran inquiries of my own. Amid all that was happening on Terra, I should not have been surprised that news of events on Luna were slow to reach us, and then buried under bulletins detailing our more parochial set of troubles. Everything Aleia had told me, though, was confirmed by archived reports sent by the governors at Port Luna and by the Sisterhood itself. I read the angry demands for more protection and the pleas for formal inquiries into who had been responsible. I also saw statements of support sent back to the Citadel from the High Council and promises to look into the question of resources and urgently investigate the circumstances of the attack. That meant, of course, that nothing much would be done, for we were stretched here on Terra, and the Sisterhood must have felt like a very distant priority when cultists were capable of launching their own raids within gunship flight range of the palace. The truth was, sadly enough, that this was just one such attack among a thousand others, and not even the greatest of them. The serving Ecclesiarch even sent the Sister Commander her own message of condolence and solidarity, which I thought was either magnanimous or cynical, depending on how much, if anything, she had known. If Aleia had been right, then it seemed implausible that Slist could have been acting alone. No doubt he had much support within his old fief still, even if his replacement held very different views to him. The Church, or elements of it, would never sit easily alongside the Soulless Ones, no matter how carefully matters were managed in the Senatorum. In hindsight, I should have done more with the information I had been given, despite Aleia's request to keep it to myself. My decision to let her pursue her own course of vengeance was, by rights, the correct one, I still believe. I had my own orders, and a feud between agencies of the Adeptus Terra was neither uncommon nor, as Valoris had made very clear to me, any concern of ours. In addition, I was not so callous as to leave Aleia entirely alone. My intention had always been to seek her out, once the immediate crisis had passed, and to offer her all the support I could within the dictates of the law that bound me. For all that, I erred. It was a serious matter, an attack on a major imperial facility by a man who had once served at the highest levels of government. Even in the midst of all else that was going on, I should have seen its full import. My reasoning, to the extent that I offer mitigation, was that the long-awaited uprising was by then beginning in earnest. Just as predicted, the Splintered had finally made their move, eschewing their hidden war and emerging into the open. Our intelligences gave us early warning of a sudden rise in comms traffic, much of which we had by that stage intercepted and were capable of decoding. That was followed in short order by observations of armed warbands emerging from known strongholds and making for the few intact transit ways. The various cabals, although much reduced in capability since the start of our work, still had control of significant amounts of looted vehicles and armor, and were able to bring them together into convoys of considerable size. They even had atmospheric vessels in their arsenal, which they used effectively in those early hours to destroy a number of our auger relays. We mobilized immediately. The plans had already been laid, and all we were waiting for was a precise location. That became evident soon enough. The cults were converging rapidly on the Cathedral of the Emperor Deified. As soon as we were certain that this was the target, orders went out to all security forces to muster at that location. I should perhaps clarify the nature of this location, since the word cathedral is apt to cover a range of things. The Cathedral of the Emperor Deified was one of a handful of cardinal sites of worship on Terra, each more properly understood as cities in their own right. They are vast constructions, the kind of wildly excessive edifices that this world specializes in. Such sites have their own private armies, their own clerical staff, their own menial carders and servitor pools. They are not single buildings in any conventional sense, but rather interlinked clusters of increasingly vast naves and transepts, culminating in a central dome and altarpiece that rivals the Senatorum for sheer bulk. I doubt that any living soul would have been able to count the numbers living and working within it, for just like the wider world city that surrounded and merged with it, whole communities lived and died within its gargantuan precincts, from the cardinals and senior priests at the top of the chain to the impoverished gutter trash scraping a living in the darkness of its nigh endless catacombs. Like many of the major ministerium facilities on Terra, the main business of that place was pilgrims, who arrived in vast numbers with every incoming transport. Across the centuries, this never-ending tide had swelled prodigiously, such that the great cathedrals resembled enormous processing pens rather than places of worship, their aisles crammed with exhausted, bewildered, and ecstatic mobs, hurried along by armed priests and prey to all sorts of predatory hangers-on. The coming of the rift had stemmed this traffic to some degree, though the flood had never dried up entirely. As the press of off-world pilgrims had lessened, the needs of the native population had burgeoned, and soon famished and desperate native citizens were crowding into the sermon pens and indulgence markets, hoping for a very real salvation from the privations they had become subject to. It had been observed from the very start of the anarchy that the ecclesiarchy was often a target for the splintered, and thus we already had the major cathedrals and basilicas on our watch list. Detailed schematics of a number of them had been circulated, together with outline plans of assault. We knew that clerics in a number of locations had actively colluded with the enemy in the past, and that despite the best efforts of the Inquisition, something similar was likely to accompany the last great stand of the corrupted. So it proved. Once the cult offensive was underway, we were soon receiving reports of priests turning on their superiors and rising up in support of the oncoming masses of fighters. Within a very short time, almost all comms traffic from the cathedral itself had been cut, and our range sensors told us that significant numbers were gathering there and digging in for what would be, in their debased and deluded hopes, a glorious final stand against oppression. Once the news reached me, I felt a surge of relief. At that stage, my chamber and I were fighting far from the safe zones of the palace and its environs, hunting down any further sign of the Lacrimosa. Since our close encounter at the Arbites Tower, all trace of her seemed to have vanished. She had either gone to ground with impressive thoroughness, or was doing as her hololith recording had suggested, and had joined the greater muster in the planetary south. "At last," I said, looking up at Ravathane, "a chance to end it." He could agree with me on that, at least. Soon we were back in Rastava, and making our way towards the designated muster point. Many other chambers I knew were making their own way, resulting in a combination of forces not seen since the Lion's Gate. Valoris himself would lead us, making this a rare occasion when the residual might of our order would be on full display. The Imperial Fists had been fully briefed on the plans, and were expected to deploy at full company strength. Matters were more complicated with the Minotaurs, since relations had now completely broken down between Moloch and Garadon, and there had not been time to offer mediation in the hope of mending the rift. They were informed, of course, though whether that would amount to anything remained uncertain. Aside from this strength in elites, we also had the services of numerous Militarum regiments, most of them under the command of the Lord Commander Militant. His Cathartai Arenas and Earth Guard had been billeted for some time close to where we expected the offensive to take place, and in addition to them, we had detachments from the Palatine Sentinels and Katanda Stalwarts under Valoris's direct command. Combined with the expectation of overwhelming support from the recently arrived naval flotilla, it seemed clear that this would be the decisive blow we'd been steadily building towards, something that would snuff out the lingering stench of the anarchy for good and pave the way for proper reconstruction. We flew southwards at full speed, racing over the endless tracts of urban sprawl, our minds already concentrated on the fighting to come. We had learned much of the enemy's ways in the series of strikes conducted thus far, and knew we could expect a deeper species of corruption. I studied the killing edge of Gnosis's blade, inspecting it for any sign of flaw. As I did so, I felt my fingers itch to grasp its stave again. This would be a punitive exercise, rather than a measured one. We would be free to stretch our limbs. The muster point was a wide ceremonial plaza, approximately 50 kilometers to the north of the cathedral. It had been used for military parades during imperial feast days, and so was large enough to accommodate the forces then being assembled. As we came into land, surrounded by similar gunships in livery of gold and crimson, I could see the great dome of the cathedral itself rise up against the distant southern horizon, flanked by a coronet of black towers. It dominated even the great spires that clustered around it, a curved face of filth-streaked stone, topped by a cupola of tarnished copper, before we dropped down further and it disappeared from view again, screened by the intermediate mass of hab pinnacles. We disembarked into a scene of intense activity. Heavy transports of the Palatine Sentinels lumbered up along the plaza's eastern flank, together with the grinding progress of supporting armor. Gunships flew overhead in the colors of many regiments, making the air around us stink with promethium fumes. Infantry detachments marched in lockstep down the gang ramps of airborne personnel carriers, ready for onward transport into waiting ranks of chimeras. We made our way through the crowds, heading up to the plaza's northern edge, where the command groups were setting up. Comms towers had already been hauled into position, and mobile auger units and medicay stations were being unloaded and assembled. Fixed artillery pieces were mounted in positions around the perimeter, as well as prefabricated rockcrete barriers at ground level. A collection of battle standards had been hoisted up over the raised platform on which the commanders had assembled, all of which struggled to unfurl in the still, humid heat of the Terran day. Valoris stood at the highest level of the ranked platform with Garadon, surrounded by a clutch of senior officers, sanctioned psykers, militarum aides and clerics from the Sector Ministerium Command.
"They have the entire structure occupied," the Captain General was saying, nodding briefly as I approached. "All assets at their disposal have been committed, with the greatest concentrations in the central dome nexus. Augurs indicate extensive fortification at all the outer portals."
Garadon was arrayed in his full armor, ready to enter combat. I suspected, like me, he was pleased to be finally doing what he had been made to do.
"Recommend initial gunship strikes here, here, and here," he said, indicating a series of locations on the hololith that stood between them all. "We can break the perimeter and land primary kill teams. Once the ranged guns are out of commission, the advance of the infantry regiments can commence." "As you will it," Valoris said. "We have detected significant psionic concentrations. My chambers will arrange their destruction. You will be given coordinates for these."
I glanced at the tactical proposals. They were standard enough. This enemy had lasted longer than many had predicted, but even so, the bulk of their troops were not professionals. A smattering of warp-born gifts and a ramshackle leadership of heavily corrupted mutants would do little to save them from what was to come. I was about to speak then, to ask if we had a detailed assessment of which cabals had assembled, and whether any remained beyond the cathedral limits, when the first comms reports came in. We all received them. The signals operators working just meters away from us were overloaded instantly, their banks of processors suddenly lighting. The skies above us crackled and shifted, as if a storm were about to break. Far to the south, where the cathedral lay just beyond sight, the heavens began to darken.
"What is this?"
Garadon asked, breaking away from the conference. He was not speaking to Valoris, but to whichever one of his own warriors had just made urgent contact. My own feed became clogged with fragmentary information, all tumbling in at great speed.
"Orbital strikes launched. Multiple hits confirmed. Daedalus Crater has moved position. Landers inbound to your location."
The naval support we'd been promised had swung into action, many hours ahead of schedule. Even as we grappled with the flood of information, we could see the truth of it for ourselves. The southern horizon lit up, followed swiftly by the crack of munitions. It looked for an instant as if the entire swath of city had been demolished, pummeled by bright white spears descending from the heavens. Our augurs swam with hundreds of signals, dropships, orbital gunships, troop carriers, all plummeting at combat strike speeds. The Minotaurs, not just in force, but at chapter strength. Ranged vidfeeds picked up Thunderhawks roaring through the torrents of lesser craft, strafing and blasting at ground targets. Drop pods lanced earthwards, flaring with re-entry burn, slamming directly into the heart of the combat zone.
"They knew," Garadon said, turning to Valoris. "They knew ahead of time."
He was right, of course. Space Marines were renowned for their rapid deployments, but even they would not have been able to place so many warriors in those exact positions at such short notice. That went doubly for the conventional troops accompanying them, all of which were making planetfall in patterns that must have resulted from advance planning.
"Get me a Shariel,"
Valoris ordered, taking up his helm.
"No reply from Militarum headquarters," replied a comms orderly, glancing up at the Captain General with some trepidation. "Comms blockade in place across all regiments under their command. More landings are incoming."
The southern horizon continued to blaze. Enormous columns of smoke rose up from the cityscape, while the orbital strikes kept on coming. I could almost taste the Physalene, even at such distance. We had expected interference from Moloch. We had expected his warriors to do their own thing, and had anticipated the need to manage their presence. We even had orders to intervene if they impeded the progress of fighters under our command. But this was different. This was a wholesale departure from any agreed joint planning. This was a replacement of combined objectives with something very much their own. I ran some quick calculations. Garrodin commanded around 80 Imperial fists, all taken down from Phalanx. Valoris had mustered several hundred custodians, all that could be spared. The Palatine Sentinels and Katanda stalwarts numbered a few thousand. Moloch, on the other hand, had brought nearly 1,000 of his space marines. Ashariel's regiments already outnumbered those under our command, and the troops dropped from orbit must have been at least twice as numerous. They had cut us out. They had brought a force of many times our own to do it. This was no longer merely a matter of jostling for prestige. This was insurrection, and on a scale that could not have been arranged without approval at the highest level. Throughout all of this, Valoris remained as calm as I had ever seen him. He studied the incoming data carefully, making no precipitous response. Around us, the gathering muster continued just as before, with carriers coming down in orderly procession. The noises of ferocious assault echoed dully in the distance, making our preparations seem not so much futile as utterly ludicrous. We were still equipping ourselves for a battle that had already started. If Moloch's reputation was even halfway close to the reality, the fighting would not last very long.
"Which High Lords are still taking our communications?"
Valoris asked. The operator grappled with his cumbersome battlefield equipment.
"Lords Arx, Roskavler, Kerepliades, Mir, Retira, Throde. No reply from any others."
Still, Valoris made no immediate reaction. He seemed lost in thought, even as Garrodin shouted orders to his company command, and the assembled generals did likewise to their regiments. I watched him with growing disbelief, and, I admit it now, frustration. We had done nothing. We had let ourselves be bound by laws that had passed into obsolescence a lifetime ago. Now others had done what we should have, leaving us as irrelevant as if we had never passed dissolution at all. I remembered what the priest had told me in his strange ecstasy following the slaughter of his people.
"The angels of death, just as was promised."
Finally, Valoris looked up again. He still had not donned his helm. If I had wished to see some emotion on that scarred face, anger, perhaps even embarrassment, I was to be disappointed. His serenity was unbroken.
"The Emperor's work is done, no matter the hand that strikes the blow," he said. "The muster will complete according to schedule. Summon any High Lords who still remain open to communication. I shall take the forward position and find out just what has taken place here."
He gestured towards Garrodin, myself, a handful of others.
"You will come with me," he said. "Treachery, so they say, demands witnesses."
And so we progressed, caught in a strange limbo between uncertainty and irrelevance. Behind us, the muster continued as planned, with more troops arriving at every moment. The structures were put in place, the guns were loaded with their ammunition, and slowly, painfully slowly, all was made ready. While this took place, a select group of us took ship and flew to our forward command post. This had been secured already, and was manned by custodians of Valoris's own company. It was located at the summit of an administratum hive, one that had survived the anarchy virtually intact, and still housed the prefecture's household staff and menial ranks. We had taken over the topmost levels, landing sensor equipment, void shielding and anti-aircraft capability on what had been an observation deck. The intention had been to use it while the assault on the cathedral was underway, given that a direct line of sight existed between the two locations. Now it was being pressed into service early, as a means to find out just what was going on. On the journey over, I found myself travelling next to Garadon. He was, as you might expect, seething.
"They protected the cults the whole time," he said. "We gave you warning. They used them as cover."
Could that really have been true? It was certainly the case that the Minotaurs had destroyed many splintered cabals, and with a thoroughness that matched their savage reputation. On the other hand, we had all heard the accusations that they had hampered strikes against key personnel, making our combined efforts less effective. Perhaps their erratic behaviour had not just been about prestige, as we had suspected, the desire to best a rival chapter and take the credit for Terra's pacification. Perhaps it had been more studied. "We do not know that yet," I said, remaining, as so often in those times, stubbornly loyal to a line that I no longer believed in. We closed in on the command post, and I tried to make sense of the little we knew. 4 High Lords were not taking communications from Valoris: Asharil, Pereth, Phaedix, and Drachmar. Between them, those 4 commanded the most potent military assets under the direct responsibility of the Council: the Guard, the Navy, the Assassins, and the Arbites. Their silence could mean any number of things: genuine equipment malfunction, a combined push for greater autonomy within the existing Imperial command structure, a simple misunderstanding over policy. Or, of course, that most archaic of Terran customs, a coup d'etat.
"You had the power to end this,"
Garadon told me, and I did not need to see his face to pick up the resentment there.
"It is as if you were given a sword, the finest sword ever created, and choose not to use it. I will never understand it."
I said nothing. That time, I had no response to make. We touched down amid clouds of ash-blown smoke. As we disembarked, we could look out with our own eyes at the destruction the heavy bombardment had wreaked. We strode to the edge of the observation platform, all of us gazing out at it. The dome still stood, but it had been punched through with what must have been orbital lasers. Whole sections of the cathedral's body had come down under the barrage, and now slumped into smouldering ruins. Bronze-liveried thunderhawks still circled the high parapets, driving through the rolling columns of smoke, but they had long since ceased firing. I could make out individual Minotaur squads, standing a guard atop the higher campaniles and spire towers, though their numbers were dwarfed by the regiments of Militarum troops also present. They swarmed over every open surface: the cloisters, the processional avenues, the exposed courtyards. Artillery pieces were being unloaded from grav haulers, and tanks were rumbling into fixed guard positions. Sentinel walkers lurched into defensive locations, and heavy cargo lifters hovered in the distance, all of them disgorging more infantry. The battle was over. If the cults had indeed intended to make their last stand here, their presence had been snuffed out with a singular brutality. Moloch was the master of the place now. Who, though, was the master of Moloch? We did not have to wait long to find out. Even as the last of our number reached the command post, the vid transmission began. Initially, I assumed that it had been sent to us alone, some kind of battlefield communication to establish parameters for bargaining, but we soon realized that was not the case. "This is being carried on broad-spectrum civil distribution bands," Valoris' Vexillus Praetor informed us. "It is being seen by everyone, just like Gilliman's ceremony. Every hab or communal assembly with a functional vid unit would be watching and listening to the same thing." The images came from within the cathedral, seemingly somewhere close to the high altar. The speaker was one I recognized: Urthu Hermotalion, who had once been master of the Administratum. Next to him were 2 serving High Lords: Avaliza Drachmar, the Grand Provost Marshal, and Phaedix, Grand Master of Assassins. With them stood another deposed High Lord, Baldo Slist, the former Ecclesiarch. And there, in the background, was Moloch, who appeared to be holding a severed head in one hand. From our intelligence briefings, I recognized the bloated features of Figer de Flame, the so-called Master of Dreams. His rebellion had been ended almost as soon as it had begun. But then, of course, he had only been a tool in all this, a means to generate the disorder they needed.
"Behold, the age of insurrection is over,"
Hermotalion said,
addressing the remote oculus with all the polished assurance he had displayed when in office.
The heretics are destroyed. The future shall be as in the unchanging past, just as he ordained it, just as the Lex demands.
He smiled warmly.
The Imperium as it was, the Imperium as it must be, Imperium Aeterna.
Chapter 21. Alea. I admired them. I make no apology for that. It is possible to admire an enemy, to find things worthy of respect in what they do. They were monsters, of course, we all knew that. But Throne, how they fought! But I am getting ahead of myself. We had a name, Slist. Valerian had given me that much, and in truth, that was all I had gone to him for. I had never expected, nor needed, help from another quarter, especially with the state of the planet as it was. I do remember thinking that if the rumours of a mass cultist uprising proved true, then I could not understand their actions. Unless they were all fools, they must have known that their only hope of survival was to remain underground, and that if they ever showed themselves openly, then they would invite overwhelming retribution. We of the Sisterhood had preserved ourselves using similar techniques across millennia. I remember thinking that something was strange about the whole thing. Perhaps I should have thought a little harder about that at the time, but of course we were set on our own path by then, and I had not come to Terra in order to take part in its many crises. The woman, Castilian, had given us the location we needed, the Cathedral of the Emperor Deified. The name itself was an insult to intelligence. At such times, faced with the stupidity of the masses who made up this broken empire, I sympathised with Valerian's desire to have as little to do with it as he could. Still, at least it was a prominent site. It only took a few discreet inquiries to gain exact coordinates, and we soon discovered that the place was massive, one of the principal foundations of the ecclesiarchy on Terra. A suitable place, then, for an old master of the church to hole up in, though, of course, at that stage, we had no idea who else he had taken with him. We set off as soon as we had what we needed. That was little enough. A long-range flyer with minimal armaments, ourselves, our blade weapons. We stored schematics of the complex within our armor systems, and intended to set down a short distance to its north, then head through underground passages in order to break in via one of the many catacomb entrances. Looking back now, our plan seemed laughably inadequate. However, you must remember that we expected to be facing Ministorum guards, the kind who would have spent most of their days watching over pilgrims shuffling up to reliquaries. If Slist himself was surrounded by more capable troops of his own, then we were sure we could account for those. We were alive with haste and fury, consumed by a singular desire for the truth. If he indeed proved to be the author of the attack on us, I wished to make his demise as messy and as public as possible, to send a message to the wider Imperium that we were not to be interfered with. As we flew south, flying fast and low and keeping close to the spire flanks, I was taken aback by just how bad things had become. I had seen my fair share of fighting the last time I had been on Terra, but had expected things to have recovered by then. Instead, it was evident that civil collapse was still widespread. The main culprit, I suspected, was the world city's sheer size. When you have flown for hour after hour, seeing only hab towers and administratum facilities, all pressed up close to one another and clogged with inhabitants, you realise what a powder keg this entire world is. Interrupt the food supplies to those places, cut off their water and power, allow long-seated resentments to fester unchecked, and you could see clearly how they might become ungovernable with speed. Reimposing full control over such tracts would take years, I guessed. Still, if there was one thing the Imperium knew how to do, it was to suppress the human spirit. A sustained period with the Arbites, and Inquisition given a free hand, and the old herd timidity would doubtless return. For now, though, it was quite evident that the insurrection was getting worse the further we went. we realized belatedly that we were heading into zones where its power was greatest. Even then, I did not make the connection. Blinded by my desire to confront Slist, it never occurred to me that the relationship between the Church and these cabals was far too close to be ignored. We drew near to our destination, and by then it became evident, even to us, that we were just a small part of something much, much bigger. We picked up the signs of vessels massing at a locus about 60 kilometers west of our planned set-down point, and I recognized the call signals of both Custodian and Adeptus Astartes units. They were not hiding their presence, and by their numbers alone it was clear that this was the long-promised suppression operation. We stuck to our itinerary. There was still no reason at that juncture to believe that the cathedral was also their objective. Even if it had been, we still believed we could slip in ahead of them and go after our target. In the event, we got there just in time to see others beat us to the prize. That was when I witnessed it for the first time. An entire chapter of the Adeptus Astartes, unfettered, doing what they were so very, very good at. I had been at the Lion's Gate. I had witnessed reality itself coming apart on that night, the Shedim running rampant. I had seen the greatest warriors in all the Imperium stride out to contest them. I knew I would likely never take part in such a battle ever again, and yet the Minotaurs just then in that place were still beyond any possible expectation. On arrival, we knew immediately that something was wrong at the cathedral. It was stuffed with troops, many of whom had raised banners displaying icons I did not recognize. They were certainly not Imperial, nor were they Ministorum. I saw a broken diamond and other crude symbols and remembered what Valerian had told me of the splintered. Guns were everywhere, angled from the high parapets and spires, as well as atmospheric flyers bristling with autocannons. Even as that surprise registered with us, and we conferred as to what we might do about it, the skies simply split apart. Sonic booms rang out, fire fell in tumbling cataracts from the burning cloud cover. The light show was eye-burning, exploding in a huge arc across the entire cityscape ahead of us. I recognized the telltale intensity of orbital lasers amid the carnage, weapons used in large-scale warfare, not suited for deployment in situations where you might conceivably want to make use of a built environment afterwards. The barrage just kept coming, wave after wave, flattening whole hab towers and sending cliff faces of pale grey dust swelling up into the fire-rippling air. I saw drop pods scream earthwards, their teardrop profiles incandescent with re-entry flares. The noise was incredible, a roar of munitions going off, broken by the echoing cracks of structural supports collapsing. We were close enough to use our battle sights directly, and thus could see the Space Marines burst from their pods and add the rattle of bolter fire to the cacophony. I thought the Great Dome itself might fall in, but somehow much of it remained intact, though with such huge gashes in its surface that the Space Marines were able to direct their drop pods right through the gaps. Thunderhawks and Storm Eagles began to add a unique mix of engine growl and cannon hammer to the relentless violence. And before long, whole sections of the outer cathedral walls were blackened and broken, their guards burned alive or buried under roaring cascades of rubble. I heard the vox-amplified battle cries of the Space Marines themselves, and though I could not make out the words at such range, the sound was still enough to chill the blood. They were visions of pure savagery, those fighters. They were not there to take ground nor to seize objectives. They were there to slay, to raise, to scour from existence. After that first horrific phase of combat, yet more vessels came down from orbit. These were naval lifters, each one holding scores of Militarum warriors from a whole range of regiments. I saw Valkyries and Vultures make the descent, as well as specialized transports holding heavy armor in their claws. The cathedral's subsidiary domes, campaniles and naves spread out over a huge area, but the Minotaurs reduced much of it to masonry debris, within the first hour of their assault. What resistance they encountered was erased with such contempt that it might as well not have existed at all. Once the larger numbers of Allied naval and militarum forces had arrived in place, the scale of the exercise became fully apparent. The lifters kept coming down, more and more of them, making use of the open spaces recently cleared by the intensive bombardment and disgorging their contents directly onto detritus heaps. It took a lot to make me hesitate. My sisters, all of them seasoned warriors, were the same. And yet, just then, having witnessed that wholesale orgy of annihilation, I had no idea what to do. We knew, as much as we knew anything with certainty in those days, that Slist should have been inside that place. Could he possibly have survived? Had he had anything to do with the insurrectionists who had, briefly enough, occupied it? Or had Castilian been wrong? So we waited. We watched. Tali Shah was the first to express a view. "This is over," she signed. "If he were in there, he is surely dead now." I could not disagree with the logic, but was loath to simply accept the situation. We had come so far, and had already seen that expectations could be overturned rapidly. "Not yet," I signed. "I need to see more." So we picked our way closer, leaving our transport behind and stalking through the raised viaducts between spires. By then, the palls of smoke from the many demolitions rolled over everything, giving the world a filmy, ghost-like quality. Those surrounding towers that had remained intact loomed like grave markers amid a swathe of drifting fog. We were arrayed for battle, of course, and thus we were able to use our armour to protect ourselves. The civilians living in the cathedral environs were not so fortunate, and we witnessed them stream in their thousands from their wrecked habs and workplaces. Screams and wails began to rise from every quarter, a doleful chorus that grew to accompany the ongoing machine snarls of the army assembling ahead of us. It took us a long time to make progress through all that. The assault had damaged every structure within a large radius. And even as we travelled, we saw weakened bridges, buttresses and transit arches collapse in gouts of dust. By the time we had gained a proper eyeline to the cathedral's central massif, the serious fighting was already over. The build-up of forces continued, however, with both conventional troops and space marines moving to occupy strategic locations all across the ravaged site. Standards had been unfurled up at the level of the Great Dome, and hung limply amid the skirling clouds. Sigils of the Adeptus Terra, the Administratum, the Astra Militarum, and the Imperial Navy. We reached a vantage point partway up the eastern face of a hab block and hunkered down. "They are occupying it," I signed. "Why?" asked Irinia. "They have done what they came for." I had no answer for her. Everything was unclear. My augurs told me that the muster of custodians and imperial fists some 50 kilometres distant had yet to make a move. If they had been gathered to contest the splintered, then they had missed their opportunity. And what of Slist? If he were dead, killed in the assault, then at least we could take some satisfaction from the outcome, albeit not from the direct revenge we wished for. But he was not dead. "Transmission incoming," Lethiel reported. "Encrypted?" I asked. "No." She looked up at me, startled. "Broad spectrum. Civilian band. This is being sent out everywhere." By then I was almost incapable of being surprised. Perched on the edge of ruin, our battle plate already grey with the dust and smoke of combat, we did then what everyone else on the entire planet was doing. At least those who had not had their habs blown into fragments. We watched the broadcast. I shall not relate the full text of what was said here. There are plenty of other archives where it can be found, should you be interested and have the appropriate clearances. I did not know the identities of all those picked out in those grainy, faltering vid sequences. We were using our armor systems to relay the signals, and some details may not have been adequately picked up. Gavania, who had spent more time on Terra than any of us, was able to fill in the blanks. So it was that I laid eyes on Baldo Slist for the first time. He looked ancient, wrinkled and foul. His robes were absurdly rich, and rings festooned his fat fingers. He did not speak. None of them did, save the one calling himself Idthu Hematalion. That man should, by rights, have held no rank at all in that place, but clearly was the de facto master of the rest of them, just as he had been before. "Imperium Eterna," Hematalion said, his long face flickering over the comlink. "The most perfect realm ever conceived and realized, created and guided by his infallible will, shaped and defended by his faithful servants." I let my chin come to rest on my clenched fist and marveled at the madness of it. "How, then, has it endured when our enemies are possessed of such infinite malice?" "It has endured because it has been preserved by its people. We have had faith, unshakable for 10,000 years, faith that our destiny is not just to survive, but to conquer. Faith to wage eternal war against the heretic, the mutant, the xenos, and faith that this perfection has been enshrined in laws. To break those laws is, as we have discovered, to invite anarchy across our threshold." He was strangely persuasive, that man. I almost found myself nodding in agreement, and I hated the Imperium. "And so the corrupted have run amok on the holiest of all worlds, a blasphemy that should never have been tolerated by its masters," he went on. "I know well that you have suffered during this time. I know you have been afraid. You understand, as I do, that some ruptures should never have been allowed to take place. You understand, as all of us here do, that change is the enemy of rectitude, and that those who let it happen do not suffer as you are suffering. They are always safe, and from that position of security, they have sought to lecture you on what must come next. They have bent their minds towards 1,000 other worlds ahead of this one, and sent away the great armies that ought, by right, to have stood guard against the unravelling of the law. So the High Lords have failed you. They have failed him. Even now they engage in their own disputes while your spires burn. Enough. Enough. It can be borne no longer. We have acted. The foul heretics known as the Splintered are destroyed. No more shall their filth pollute this world. I ordained this because I wearied of the half-measures your old masters put in place to defeat them. The enemy is a savage beast. To fight him, we must employ savagery of our own. Now the task has been achieved. From this day onward, order returns. The law returns. We are, as you can observe for yourself, taking back control." I watched Slist the whole time. He stood at Hematalion's shoulder, nodding every so often. I guessed that we of the Sisterhood counted as just one aspect of this hated change. "Believe me, I did not wish to assume command in this way," Hematalion continued. "I regret that our ancient and sacred precepts were overturned so brutally, and that this has therefore become necessary. Thankfully, others of the Council also understood the need to act. You see beside me two of that number. In the void above, two more stand with us in command of our fleets. Together with my valued colleague, the rightful Ecclesiarch, we are six. The Hexarchy, a refutation of the failed Reform Council, and a renewal of the old one. Moreover, you may be assured that we are men and women, our bodies untouched by manipulation, gene science, or suspect magics. The Imperium has always been governed by such men and women. Its foundational laws state that such must be so. Indeed, Those very laws were drafted by the one who, in this current age, has done so much to uproot them. Perhaps his memory faded during his long slumber. But we are here now to remind him.
They dare it, Rover signed, infusing the gestures with both aversion and contempt. They damn themselves.
Perhaps they had done. Then again, who was in place to stop them? The Primarch was far away, occupied with conquest. The rump of the Council was divided and weak. The custodians were bound by their obsessions with neutrality, so long as the palace was secure. And then there were the Minotaurs, the most ruthless, hyper-violent warriors in the entire galaxy, who seemed to be underwriting the whole enterprise. I had seen and heard enough. Hematalion continued his address, but I cut the feed and turned to my sisters. It changes nothing, I signed. We came here for one man, and he stands before us alive. I looked over at the semi-ruined cathedral dome, and the massed soldiers and the tanks and the gunships and the ranged cannons. Focus your minds, I ordered. Clear them of irrelevance. We strike now.
Chapter 22. Jack. They took me to the Excelsis Crore again, just as before, only this time I travelled as their hostage. I did not accompany them on their own lifter, of course. An entire cavalcade of craft blasted off from hidden pads set within the naval headquarters complex, and I was assigned to one of the smaller ones. As I took my seat in the crew compartment, shadowed by a pair of armed guards the whole time, I found myself sitting opposite the very same Captain Derham, who had greeted me on that first disastrous visit to Ashariel's kingdom. He at least had the wherewithal to look embarrassed. I wondered just how such a mediocre officer could have risen so far in the Lord Commander Militant's favour. He shared precious little of Ashariel's crude self-assurance. I supposed he had been sent as a recurring insult to remind me of my place in things.
"With apologies, Lord," he said,
just as we were about to clear for takeoff.
"It must be done."
He produced a hand scanner, and I stood up briefly, arms raised, to have it run over me. I'd already been relieved of my communications devices and had my augmetic grid links disabled, leaving me mute and isolated. But they were being careful. Except that they had not been quite careful enough. I had kept the comm bead given to me by Valerian, guessing that anything used by his order would be adequately shielded against standard security scans. It was small enough to insert into the lone eye of my Aquila chain of office, and so it sat there, in full view, inconspicuous as a jewel. Derham concluded the sweep, then nodded.
"That will be fine, Lord."
My opinion of him lowered just a little further, and I took my place. We took off shortly afterwards. I sat back in my seat, feeling wretched. I paid no attention to any of the lifter's sensor readings on the short journey into orbit. I knew what they would tell me. That Perith's fleet had dispersed, delivering its deadly cargo to the world below. At that stage, I knew nothing of the events taking place in the planetary south, though I had already guessed the shape of what had to transpire next. The splintered had been preserved, kept as a threat, just long enough to gather the forces the static tendency needed. Under the pretext of restoring order, those same forces would now be unleashed as the defenders of the old Imperium, instantly rendering my efforts to strengthen the Reform Council's hand void. I recalled then how many times we had attempted to make sense of the Minotaur's erratic behaviour, and I cursed myself that it was not seen for what it was. I wondered how deep the conspiracy ran. Roscavla had warned me, but I had never truly thought that it could extend to more than one, possibly two, renegade members of the Council. Neither Ashariel nor Perith had been suspects. More of them must have been involved, though, since a coup on this scale could not be marshalled solely from orbit. All of that remained idle speculation, however, until we docked with the great battleship. Derham seemed to have been allocated to me as my permanent escort, and took me up onto the command bridge. As we went, I saw the frenetic activity all around me, with ratings and officers running from station to station. The ship was being prepared for combat. My heart sank even further. We eventually arrived at the bridge, standing under the same great armor-glass vaults, surrounded by a crowd of the same naval commanders, advisors, and guards. Except this time, of course, Ashariel staff mingled with them too, and there were also a couple of space marines from the Minotaurs standing sentinel just above the navigation throne, motionless and silent. A tactical station had been constructed using the battleship's enormous data screens and auger relays. A vast array of information fizzed and cycled before us, detailing landings, detainments, incursions, and reinforcements. I saw accurate maps of locations both in the planetary south, centered on the Ecclesiarchy estates around the Cathedral of the Emperor Deified, and the Imperial Palace itself. The former seemed to be the focus of the actual troop landings, whereas the latter had not been touched. Orderlies jogged between cogitator stations and tactical screens the whole time, inserting comms tubes and binary slugs before scuttling off again. Perith and Ashariel were both present, but neither acknowledged me. There must have been several hundred adepts jostling around them, so that was not entirely surprising, though it did make me wonder why they had summoned me at all. Perhaps they believed I would come around to their way of thinking once I realized how extensive the transformation was to be, and wished to retain a sense of continuity once full control was established. Or perhaps they merely wanted to demonstrate just how ineffective my short tenure had been. In any case, Derim kept me under close watch, and I had no opportunity to do anything other than mutely observe. It was there, among all those guards and officials and lumbering servitors, that I watched Hematalian's broadcast address from the cathedral. It was there that I saw the other traitors clustered around him before the high altar. Slist, Drachmar, and, most gut-wrenching of all, Phaedix. It was no comfort to have been proved right. I had done nothing effective to hinder him. He must have known I was on to him at Valoris's summit, but by then he must also have known that it was too late to prevent anything. I wished then that I could somehow reach through the view screen and grab him by the throat. I wished then that I had been better. I listened, of course, and heard the arguments. They were specious, the lot of them, though I feared that many on Terra would readily sympathize. As I did so, I tried to calculate what strength there was to oppose them. The other High Lords had power of their own, especially the Inquisition, which had seemingly not been involved in any of this. Sufficient custodians were garrisoned in the palace to make an assault on that bastion inconceivable, and Phalanx still hung like a statement of intent within visual range of the Excelsis crew. For the time being, there was no prospect of taking on Hematalian militarily, but by the same token, I doubted that Hexarchy had the strength to eliminate all opposition should it come to open war. It would have to start with negotiation, at least to begin with. Such was always the pattern on Terra, the rush of blood followed by the slow grind into a mire of trade-offs and compromises. And what then? Civil war? Did they really think they could face down the Primarch, however secure they might be on the throne world? After the long address was over, we entered a period of uncertainty, during which Ashariel remained busy consolidating his fortified positions on Terra, and Perith issued contingency commands in case Phalanx made a move to intercept us. During that time, I began to realize that neither of them had direct control over the Minotaurs. If any did, then it must have been Hematalian himself, whom I guessed had cultivated links with them over his many decades of service. He had been the greatest of the High Lords then, the longest-serving and the most steeped in its arcane traditions. Maybe he had even given the recall order before he was deposed, knowing what was coming. I remembered raising the possibility of the exiles with Tyron, and how quickly we had discounted them, believing that only a serving council member